Now, Ask Dr. Love with psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. For expert advice on love and relationships, call into the show at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or you can submit your question online at AskDrLove.com. Now, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and it's my pleasure to be with you. Today's show is Falling in Love Again with my special guest, Larry Bilotta. Now, Larry brings a unique perspective on understanding people, marriages, and relationships. He lived 27 years in a marriage made in hell, but in the 28th year, he fell in love with his wife. And as one of the few marriage experts to actually transform his own marriage, Larry Bilotta holds the key to bringing marriage back from the brink of divorce, even after the papers have been filed. And he and his wife, Marcia, are going to be celebrating 40 years of marriage in 2014. So it's with a lot of pleasure that I bring you Larry Bilotta. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Dr. Love, a pleasure to be here.
I love having you. So, you know, it's so funny because I love your description of 27 years in hell, a marriage made in hell.
But yes.
In the 28th year, he fell in love. So tell me, what was so hellish for the first 27 years?
Well, this is a real simple problem. When Marcia and I meet, we don't really know each other. And a lot of people tell me that. Well, we didn't really know each other. We didn't really love each other. Blah, 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 right? The beginning of your marriage really doesn't matter a whole lot. What matters is what you do with it. So what made it hell is it turns out that I was programmed by Rudy and Helen, my mom and dad. And they programmed me to be what they were, which is very self-centered people. Okay?
Okay.
They were not into their kids. They were not into kids. Mom was an alcoholic and dad was a gambler. And so they're not into their kids, and so we kind of raise ourselves. So I'm the youngest and of three, and so I'm growing up on the west side of Chicago, and my parents, I don't remember them being involved in my life as I'm wandering around the street. So I'm a pretty self-centered person. And so when you grow up with self-centeredness is the instruction, you go into your marriage with that self-centeredness as the instruction. So that's me going into the relationship. And what's Marcia come into the relationship? Is she comes in with a mother and father who are very, very stable. They literally ate by the clock. They live by the clock, and everything was on time. So I'm growing up with no time. She's growing up with a real strong clock. And we have differences that you just couldn't start counting. I mean, there was so many differences in the way we're programming. And the point of this story is we come into the marriage with our brain instructions loaded from mom and dad. And what you think is a past is not past. The childhood is not past. The childhood is today, right now. Every single situation and how you're going to handle it is all instructed into those from those first 10 years. So Marcia really started, I mean, we literally started out day one where I don't like you.
Wait, you were dating and none of this came to pass and
no,
you
no,
didn't
no.
see any?
The key to this childhood programming, it doesn't actually turn on until you marry.
I know. Ain't that the truth? Or, you know, what I always say is you get 18 to 24 months of grace period before the poop hits the fan. Or what I mean, the transferences kick in. That is, now I hate your guts. You remind me of my mother or my father. Usually it's 18 to 24 months. But, of course, marriage is guaranteed to kick the transference in ASAP. Because now
we didn't get a grace period.
You didn't. But isn't it interesting?
No grace period for us.
So a lot of people would say to you, so Larry, what was wrong with you? Why'd you marry this woman? You were miserable and you were fighting from the get-go. And there's the beauty of it, right?
That question is built on the premise that I was thinking, that she was thinking. Do you want to actually know how the marriage actually happened? We're driving around in the truck, and she says, so what do you want to do? I said, about what? Well, we getting married or what? I said, well, okay. She says, well, when? I said, well, I don't know. How about Tuesday?
How long was this into the courtship?
it was about four months. Four months.
Very quick. Very, very quick, right?
But we're troubled. See, we're troubled kids because our parents didn't teach us anything. They just basically left us to fend for ourselves. They didn't teach us anything. They didn't talk about anything. They didn't prepare us for life. And that's very common. Very, very common. And so we get this mess, and then we come into the state. Here's another thing that you got to remember, though. Both Marcia and I are programmed by parents who were miserable and stayed married. So both of us were programmed to stay married and stay miserable. So Marcia said, you go in, you don't ever come out. That's her program.
It's called a life sentence without parole.
Yes, well, life sentence without parole. Good.
Right. That's like what Mae West said. Marriage is the oldest institution I know, but I'm not ready for an institution yet.
I never heard that quote.
Yeah. But so you were programmed to be masochists and miserable because your parents modeled for you miserable marriages that they stuck by. But, you know, also there's the upside of the whole story, which is that you both recognized in each other, whether you knew it consciously or not, and I'm sure it wasn't conscious, but you saw in each other the hope to heal those wounds that you suffered, what I call the old scars.
That's what you'd like to say, sitting from where you're sitting. But I can promise you it was hell because
it was just hell.
I could not get away. Oh. She wouldn't let me get away, and my program wouldn't let me get away.
Hell. So it is hell. And so you guys just fought for 27 years. Miserable.
Because you're surviving because I lived in a communist country. Marcia's very strong-willed. I'm soft-hearted. That's not a good combination either. So I'm very soft-hearted, and I'm all relationship-like, and she's very tough and very hard, and this is the way it's got to be. And she wins the battle. She's a kamikaze on her last mission, you know. I just couldn't beat her at her own game, you know. So
which parent was she most like? Was she more like your mother or your father or a nice combo of the both?
And this is the key. She's not like my mother. She's not like my mother at all. And I absolutely went against marrying my mother.
So is she like your father?
No, she's nothing like mother or father. And this is,
but you realize, Larry, you talked about having grown up with no structure, no time. And so in that respect, your unconscious saw in her a woman who was going to be the drill sergeant, going to give you structure and time, and you're going to eat at a certain time, you know?
Yes.
She brought you the structure you didn't grow up with, you know, so
Not only did she bring me the structure, she was going to beat out my parents' programming out of me, literally. She's going to yell it out, scream it out, hit it out.
How's that working for you so far?
Well, that was horrible. It was horrible. So what's the 27 years in hell? I went in when they impeached Nixon, and I came out when they elected the second Bush. That's how long that was.
Well, you did get paroled, you know.
Yes, I did.
That's funny. And meanwhile, was she blaming everything on you? Was she doing
everything
that
everything on me, yes. Everything on me. Everything was my fault. Because as far as she was concerned, her parents programmed her properly, and my parents programmed me very, very poorly.
So she was just trying to fix you.
She had to fix the programming. That was her job. And she hated what they did. Because she knew all along that my parents' programming, she didn't call it that at the time, you know, through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. She didn't call it that, but it was programming. And by the way, you know, 27 years, I learned a lot because I was in a lot of pain. So I was searching for answers all the
mm-hmm,
time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, was she looking also at how her programming affected the relationship discord and that her drill sergeant way and her rigid way was, giving you the structure you always needed as a boy, but also a little bit over the top. Did she look at her own part and see where she might have been going wrong or no?
That's a nice question. She would apologize once a year. Once a year.
Oh.
That's the only apologies I ever got, once a year. And the apology would be all like a little 8-second comment like, yeah, I'm probably being too hard on you, but what are you going to do?
Oh, wow. But that was more than you got at home. So this is, those little crumbs, those little breadcrumbs that
yes.
we get. When we grow up with abuse and abandonment, one little crumb is enough to keep you coming back for another one crumb.
And I would think about that through the years. I would think, like, where's my compliment this year? You know, where's my apology coming this year? I wonder, I haven't got it yet. It's been June, you know, when I get my crown.
Oh, my God. It's amazing you weren't, like, on every pharmaceutical, antidepressant, everything, you know?
I think what that was a determination that I would find a way to be happy in any circumstance. That's what I ended up hunting for. How can I be happy in any circumstance? Because surely, if situations made you happy, and you had to be happy according to what was going on outside, you'd be in serious trouble. And I think I realized that, like, halfway through the hell, is that, gee, if I have to live a life where everybody has to be nice to me in order to be happy, I'm going to be miserable.
Because people aren't nice.
What day is everybody going to be nice to you? They're not.
Right.
So the situations are never going to line up. So what if I could be happy no matter what was going on externally? And
that's,
so
I now
have
ticket.
This little phrase I say, I'm happy in any circumstance. It doesn't matter what's going on.
That's right.
That's because of Marcia. Because I learned to be happy in the Marcia life. And I actually learned to enjoy Marcia. Is that what happened in the 27th year, why I fell in love with her, is I realized who she really was.
What did you realize?
I realized I was obsessing over myself, and I wasn't thinking about who she was. And the more I started to think about who she was, the more I started to realize that she's supposed to be that way. And then I realized a stunning thing, actually, in the 27th year. My brother and sister literally were programmed into destruction, into poverty, into an early death, and they literally followed the program of my parents. Marcia literally saved me from my parents' programming. And that's the day I started to have gratitude for her, because it was a painful operation, but boy was I glad that it did, that it happened. Because
you made this transformation to say, this woman loves me so much, she's saving my life.
Yes, that's exactly what the story became. She's saving my life. And that's why I fell in love with her, because the love was because of the gratitude I had for what she did. And no one else could have done it. I mean, no other woman would have been strong enough and stayed long enough to do what she did. And so that led to, you know, just, you know, really my transformation. Because without her, I couldn't have done it. But what I discovered because of her and because of the way she thinks very, very unique about everything. And I ended up developing this midlife crisis idea of what is the midlife crisis. Well, it turns out it's the pain of your childhood coming for you.
Oh, my God. Wait, that is so awesome. I love that, because it is, you have to say it again, because whatever that stuff is that's churning inside us, it's waiting to leap out. I often call it the phantom or the haunting, and it leaps out at moments when we're going through vulnerability, whether it's physical vulnerability or, you know, a sickness or some kind of chemical imbalance or hormone imbalance or a surgery. These crisis points weaken our defensive armor so that all that stuff that's churning inside us has a way of leaping out through the cracks.
So now that's your way of describing it. And that's a really good way. My way is the 10 years are a set of instructions going into your synaptic connections for 10 solid years, and they form a machine, a complete machine full of instructions. And
the
instructions' purpose is to take over your life and recreate your childhood home.
Excellent. Let's take a break, Larry. Let's take a break. And when we come back, it's Dr. Love's Quickie. So you can imagine what that's about. I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. AskDrLove.com is the web's premier relationship advice site since 1996. Visit AskDrLove.com to search thousands of free relationship advice articles on any relationship issue you may have. Or you can submit a question to her free advice column. However, if you're listening live, why not call in? Don't be shy. Dr. Turndorf wants to help you, and this is a unique chance to get a personal answer from one of today's most respected experts. So, if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. Now back to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf and I'm talking with Larry Bilota about falling in love again. Larry, this is the time in the show I call Dr. Love's Quickie because it's short and sweet. So I always do a few tweets on the topic, but I wanted to just take a second because before we broke, you said something about, it was such a cool concept that the first 10 years of marriage is the reprogramming of, you were using an image of an apparatus that you're reprogramming. Yes. So say a little more about that, how you can program yourself to go from misery to ecstasy.
All right. So the first 10 years programs you and they program you. You don't program you. And they build a machine full of instructions. The instructions have a mission, and the mission is to recreate your childhood home in your adult life. So now you get an intimate relationship and you drag that into your life. That intimate relationship is now part of the plan of that machine. Recreate the childhood home. Well, was the childhood home full of yelling? You're going to get yelling in the intimate relationship. Was the childhood home full of shutdowns? You're going to shut down. So all these things are going to happen because the machine is going to knock you out and take you over, and that's what's going to end up being the key moments of your marriage. And that's what actually creates divorce. It's those machines in him and her. And the more chaos in the childhood, the faster the marriage is destroyed.
It's so true. It's so true what you're saying. You're using different language basically to describe what I've been talking about for the last 30 years, you know?
Yeah, you are.
I mean, it's literally, I mean, that is my whole message, my whole ministry is about that. I call it the old scars and the repetition compulsion. And we are unconsciously driven to recreate the worst, most painful, traumatic aspects of our childhood because, right? I'm sure you agree. We want to get it right.
Exactly
we want
right.
to fix it.
That's exactly right. But think about, if you think about as a machine that you do not know how to control because you don't know where it is and what it is and how to turn it off, then how do you get to happiness? There's only one way. You got to find the machine. You got to understand how it works and you got to turn it off because you don't have a marriage problem. You have a childhood problem.
Right. So how did you turn the machine off, as you call it?
Yeah.
It's more like the machine is a runaway, barreling runaway train that just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating the old trauma from childhood and creating an ongoing misery. So how did you
the machine, you call it a train. It matters what you call it because if you give it an image, a physical image like the train or a machine, it needs to be some image that you think you can control, something you can get a hold of. Like, can you stop a train? You know, or if it's a truck, can you stop a truck? You know.
Okay, so talk to me and make it like, just break it down. What did you do to get into the guts of the machine? And reprogram it. What'd you do?
Here's the machine. The machine is a living entity. That's the key. It is a living being. And the way we know it's a living being is because while you're thinking, it thinks also at the same time. See, if it was you thinking, then you would consciously think, I'm no good. I'm really bad. You know what? I just don't feel good. That's what you would do if you were thinking. But when the machine is thinking, the machine is telling you you are bad, even though you want to be happy. So that's a conflict. There's two voices going on, yours and the machine's. And so if you don't acknowledge the machine has a life of its own, that it was created and now it's running on its own with mom and dad's instructions, and it has all the worst of your childhood, by the way. Every moment is in there. And so the reason I use the machine is because I want to get the idea that this machine can be opened, that it could be dismantled, that it could be taken apart with a screwdriver.
So it doesn't have to screw up your life. You know, it's a good example of this machine. I had a patient talking to me this morning, and she was describing how her boyfriend had a previous girlfriend. And he made the slip, and he said that he had been with her for a year. But it turned out he had been with her much less long. And she knew that, and so the machine in her brain, to use your language, was going off on the, you made it longer than it really was because you love her more than me. Do you see this whole thing? She went nuts in her brain on this association because in her first family, there was always one child who was loved more than her. So that was her script. That was her script.
That's the stuff.
And she didn't even know that it was happening. And so she reacted, and then he felt he was being put on a witch hunt, which got everything even more heated. And of course, then the old story became true that, well, maybe he was defensive, she said, because he was just caught in a lie that he truly did love her more. I mean, oh my word, how we distort, you know, the things.
But you know what you just talked about? You talked about what your patient was talking about, which was the situation. There is no solution in the situation. And the more you dwell on the situation, the farther you will get away from the machine and its control over you.
It's interesting.
You've got to look
at
the machine, not the situation. There's no solution there.
All right, so here, you know, it's interesting because the way I do this, it's so different. The way I work with people, and I want to hear how you do it, is that I have you step away from what's going on now, and I have you strip away. It's, believe it or not, I use the technique stripping, not getting naked, but stripping away the overt content of what you're fighting about to get to the old scar. And then you say, oh, my God, that's like unplugging the machine. Oh, I was reacting to what happened with me as a kid where my parents favored Johnny or Betty, and I was just going off. The machine was overheating on that association, and it had nothing to do with now. Now, listen, I want to take a brief break, but before I do, I just want to give you two tweets. And I want you to remember, don't believe what you've been told, that love inevitably grows cold and passion can happen. I'm going to take a brief break, and I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. If you're listening live, to speak to Dr. Turndorf on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you're outside the U.S., dial the U.S. country code, followed by 1-847-470-0937. If you yearn to get along better with your life partner or spouse, friends, family members, and even coworkers, Dr. Turndorf's latest book, Kiss Your Fights Goodbye, Dr. Love's 10 Simple Steps for Cooling Conflict and Rekindling Your Relationship, shows you how to turn conflict into connection for a lifetime of lasting love. Find out more about this book and read a free excerpt by visiting AskDrLove.com. This is Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. And if you're listening live and have a question for her, call in now at 888-463-6748. This show is for you, the listeners, so give her a call now. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, talking about falling in love again with my guest, Larry Bellota. So, Gary, before we took the break, Larry. My brain, you know what? This is really significant. My father's name is Gary. So there you go.
We're talking childhood.
There you go. My machine just took me down that road. So, Larry, we're talking about how you can get at the machine, unplug it, so that you don't get caught up in the drama of the moment, and you connect to the programming that's making you misinterpret and distort and so on. So do you have specific steps that you advise people to take in order to...
This is the one big step, Jamie, one big step. The machine has an Achilles heel, the thing that starts to take the machine apart and take away its power. See, it has something that makes it powerful, and it has that same thing taking away its power. So what is the thing that makes it powerful? It turns out it is a thing called against energy. Against energy is the killer of the human race. And yet, everywhere you look, against energy is everywhere. People like to be against. I like to be against the other team, against the other town, against my father, my brother, my sister, my uncle. I'm mad at you because you did this. I am mad because you did that, right? That's against energy. And against energy feels good. And everybody loves to feel good with against energy because they like to be, it makes them feel justified to be against things. But this turns out to be what feeds the machine. Against energy, being against anything or anyone for any reason feeds the machine and makes it stronger. So it takes your childhood pain and actually amps it up and becomes more governing of your life. And that's what I discovered from Marcia. I learned that against energy is what really kills people. So what is the antidote of against energy? What ends against energy? It turns out that it's acceptance. Acceptance of everything and everyone. So
that's lovely.
Energy makes everything worse, takes your childhood. If you have a painful childhood, it will make it painful right now, today, all the time. Your nervous system will be run by it. But if you start tuning into the word acceptance, acceptance kills against energy. Against energy kills you. Acceptance kills against energy. And so that's what I was saying about Marcia. What was I doing? I was starting to like her because I understood who she was. What was I doing? I was accepting her as
right.
she was. The way she's supposed to be. And when I could do that, I was accepting myself. See, I was programmed to be messed up, but that's not what I did. I didn't program myself. They programmed me. So now I could accept myself. And, oh, I'm not the programmer. I'm still okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's true because people don't realize that our angst comes from not accepting what is about ourselves, what is about our environment, what is about the other person. You know, we're always trying to fix things and change things, and the misery seems to come from the lack of acceptance. You know, after my husband died, one of the hardest things to accept was, you know, so much pain. And I wrote a poem that was more like a haiku, and I just said, I must allow the storms of grief to wash over me like the gracefully bending willow tree.
Yeah.
That's just that image.
That's acceptance. So acceptance is the solution. Against energy is the problem. The person you're married to is not the problem. The against energy that feeds the machine is the problem because it's what's going to keep it alive. And now a person has a choice. I mean, you know, you've been at this so many years. You've been dealing with so many people. You have seen this pattern. Against energy kills people. It just kills them slowly and
see,
just wastes them away.
A lot of times people will say, but how can I accept this thing? It's so unacceptable. This thing he does, she does. You know, how can I accept it?
That's perfect. There's the battle between who will win your life. Will against energy win your life because of its justifications of all kinds? Remember, this machine is an entity. It's an intelligent and it's evil. And it isn't you. It's not you. The machine is not you and you are not the machine. This is a key idea to getting free to love. If you want to love, you've got to get free from the machine. You've got to start by saying the machine is not me. The machine they built is not me. I am not the machine. And
that's, you know, it's funny.
Really,
I'm starting to think about penises and erectile function. I know I'm nuts, but, you know, stay with where my brain goes. It's crazy, right? So what I started to think was that, you know, when a man comes into my office and he's all freaked out about, oh my gosh, I can't get it up. I can't keep it up. Oh, I'm going to lose it. And of course, now he's going against his poor little penis.
Yes.
And the more he worries about it and the more he resists, the more he brings about the outcome that he is trying to avoid. And the day that he can say, okay, I accept. Maybe it will happen. Maybe it won't. It doesn't matter. I accept. And the minute he accepts, the anxiety chemicals subside, and then he gets the right chemicals.
That's exactly what happens. See, the whole body is run on this. The whole body is run on this.
Think of your whole body as a penis. Think of your brain as a
penis. Oh, funny. Next thing you're going to start talking about orgasms.
Oh, well, you have to accept. Maybe you won't. Maybe you will get off, you know. But it is that thing, the very thing that suddenly, when you do what you're saying, you unplug the machine, you don't do the against energy, you go with the flow. What's so amazing is then a shift happens because you're not resisting. The other person is now responding differently to you. Everything shifts.
Everything changes because you changed. People change because of your condition. And
absolutely.
That entity that's in you, that machine is in you. It eats against energy, and it literally leads you to be against things. It literally convinces you to be against things so it can feed and it could live. And if you start to think about it, this thing possesses me. This is why the world came up with that phrase, whatever possessed you. Because they know something's in us that possesses us. They
yes.
already know it's there.
It's we're nuts. We're nuts.
I'm just not myself today. Well, then who are you? We know there's something in there.
Yeah.
So acknowledge it's there.
And don't feed the beast. So
don't
it's like an image. Just unplug it. It's
it
overheating. Unplug it.
Mm-hmm. That's what the unplugging mm-hmm. is. It eats against mm-hmm. energy, and if you don't feed it, you start living on acceptance. And you were talking about those acceptance phrases. Those are great. Those are great acceptance phrases.
I love it. So tell me, you often talk about the chaos kid phenomenon. So what is this, and how is it connected to midlife crisis? Because I know you wanted to talk about
it. The abandonment, abuse, and neglect. That is the creator of the chaos kid. And so our synaptic connections are forming in those first 10 years by the billions. And every time the programmers, mother, father, start to do anything from their machines actually create your machine. So if their machines come out, and remember, there's a human being, and then there's this evil being. And the evil being is the machine, a human being is good. And so you want to be good. Because you want to be this valuable human being. There is no value in the machine. The machine is evil. We don't want it. We don't need it. So to become that human being, what do you have to do? You have to come to a life of acceptance, and that means you've got to start to see that against energy kills me, acceptance energy frees me. Against energy kills me, acceptance energy frees me.
So in your thinking, are you suggesting that whatever this programming is that we carry with us from the chaos kid phenomenon, or I call the old scars from childhood, you're saying that it comes to a head in midlife. It's like, it's now or never. It's sink or swim.
You said it earlier. It comes from 2-3 big events. When those events happen, the thing snaps and the machine literally takes the person over. So if you're married to a person with a lot of childhood pain and your life has been good, you've been good for 15, 12, 20 years, that doesn't mean that the machine isn't coming for you, and it isn't coming for your marriage. It will come.
Beware, the machine is coming for you.
And
it is absolutely true. Now, most people don't get much past, 18 to 24 months before the machine starts overheating. But it can happen. I actually have a case in which, and it was unusual because usually I see it happening earlier, but this guy, he was okay. It was all buried until midlife. And then the poop hit the fan. And he lost a job, which was already a catalyst. And then the midlife crisis hit him like crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one event. Some people will have a death and they'll lose a job. So it'll be two things. But once it starts, what does that person become? They become the chaos kid, the machine's creation. Mm-hmm. All the pain of that childhood is now being unloaded in the spouse of that intimate relationship. And if you are on the receiving end of the chaos kid in their midlife crisis, you are now going to be blamed for every evil that was ever done to that person. You
absolutely. It's absolutely because, now it's all the hurt and all the anger that I never could communicate to my parent and be understood about. Now I'm bringing this entire bag of it onto my partner, all of it. You are the Antichrist. You have ruined my life. It's like, the joke that I always tell, I call it a please pass the salt moment. We're sitting, this guy says to his best friend, last night, I think I ruined my marriage. I'm sitting at the Thanksgiving table. My wife's there, my kids, her parents. And I turn to my wife and I make the worst Freudian slip of my life. I say, you effing bitch, you ruined my life. When I meant just to say, please pass the salt.
Kaboom.
Boom. Where did that come from? Yeah. So, and all that stuff comes pouring out, you ruined my life, but really we're talking to our parents. You did, and that, remember that case I was speaking about a little earlier where she was so upset about the boyfriend and thinking it was proof that he liked the other one more than she did. She said, I'm so furious. I have to prove him wrong. He had never admits when he's wrong. And there it is, the against energy, as you call it. But it was also, I want to punish him the way I never could punish my parents. I want him to take the blame, admit his wrong. And there is that strong compulsion in this machine, the trauma machine, you know? You have got to admit this to me. And when you do, I will feel vindicated. I will feel healed.
You look, my parents never were into being right. And I never needed to be right. I never needed it. But her parents were into being right, and so she always needed it. See, what is that?
Always.
It's programming. We're just, you know, and I would justify myself like, I never have to be right. You're the one who always has to be right. What am I saying? My
You're right.
Has to be right.
You're right.
You're the one who has to always be right. Because against energy is it's got to eat. The machine's got to eat. In order to get the machine, for the machine to eat, it's got to get the host, which is you, the human being. It's got to get the human being to be against something. And what does it go after? It goes after the fact that you are losing what you care about most. So it has to convince you that you are losing what you care about most. Think about what you care about most. You care about what your parents cared about. You know, being right is something you could care about, just for an example. And if your mother always had to be right, you now always have to be right. And so if somebody threatens that, and the machine will come and say, look, they're trying to make you wrong. Well, guess what you care about? I care about being right. I am not going to let this person make me wrong. I am now feeding against energy. And I'm done. I'm screwed. I can't have intimacy. I can't have love. Not going to happen. Don't kid yourself. Isn't going to happen.
So it's like you have to know your machine. You have to know what your machine is, and you have to have what I call the observing ego working, the part of your brain that can watch and say, uh-oh, there's that thing again. That's that
the
programming.
Observing ego,
Now,
exactly right.
So you go into the acceptance. Now, where I go also is a corrective experience, because the programming, the synapses are so firing through the trauma, but we are coming back to it again and again, repetitively. Repetition obviously is a clue that there's trauma, and we're looking for a different outcome. We're looking for a healing. So one of the things I always work very strongly in relationships with couples is to help them give each other the corrective experience, which is my way of unplugging the machine for people. It's like if you needed this from your parent and you never got it, now we're conscious of it, give this to your partner. And then it feels like, I've reprogrammed the machine through a different experience with you. You're giving me a correction.
See, this is why I recommend people talk to Dr. Love, because, see, you teach people. There are so many therapists who aren't teaching anybody and aren't giving any tools. You give people tools, and you give them understanding for what are you doing? What are you going to correct? And it's all focused not on this person and how they treat me. You've always been that way.
I've always been that way.
You're a tool person. You're not a listening person.
I'm a tool.
You're a tool.
That's so funny that you made that distinction. I'm not a listener. Shut the hell up. I'm going to give you the tools to fix it.
Debbie, people need a psychotherapist that is like you, because you give a tool, you give an understanding, you give a lesson. You know, like just what you're talking about now. You're saying you need to have a situation happen where you can learn from this. So you're not telling people to run away from their relationships. And that's rare. It's real rare.
You're saying that other therapists just say, leave the relationship. What the hell?
That ends up being the answer. It's too painful. Oh. You know, they're not, but you're challenging people. You're making them think, and you're giving them the tools to think with. And I wish there was more people in the mental health world like you. Because you are doing the thing that very few of them are doing. And I have all kinds of people telling me my therapist this and my therapist that, and they're not, they're not doing a Dr. Love, I'll tell you.
Oh, baby, you made my, you're right. I got...
you're feisty and you shake people up, and that's what's needed. You know, because most people who are attracted to the field are not like you. They're very calming. They're very good listeners.
Oh, yeah. But that's, or somebody told me, you're not like that. You know, where they're, But that's not going to get you unstuck. you know?
That's right.
And you don't, and also it actually feeds the machine, doesn't it?
Yes,
oh,
it
poor
does.
Machine, poor overheating. It doesn't help us move forward.
But also the people I'm talking about, the professionals I'm talking about, are not separating the person from the machine. They're not helping the person do that.
Right.
You've done that.
Right.
You've always talked that way. And you're giving them,
cool.
That's why I say that's a tool to separate the person. Look, I'm good. The machine is bad. And so we've got me, we got it, and then we got the people out there. And you've made that separation for years.
Oh, that is so great for you to say that. I feel very acknowledged by you. It's lovely what you're saying. I feel very, very seen. If you weren't married, I'd be hitting on you. What can I say? Let's take a brief break, and I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak with Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you've recently been through a breakup and are looking for a second chance, wondering how you can reconcile with your ex, or if it's even possible after all you've been through, Dr. Turndorf's book, Make Up, Don't Break Up, presents her proven 5-step plan for reconciling with your ex. This plan was developed out of years of research, working with thousands of couples at her Center for Emotional Communication. This is a proven, no-hype, no-nonsense method that gets right to the root of the problem and shows you how to reignite the spark and rekindle a lasting relationship. For more about Make Up, Don't Break Up, visit AskDrLove.com. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf talking about how to fall in love again with my special guest, Larry Bellota. So, Larry, we're talking about midlife crisis, and I'm wondering what is the reason that you were focusing on the midlife? Is that because that's what your books are about, your programs are about? What was the reason that you wanted to focus on that?
Midlife crisis is the beginning of people willing to learn. That's why I focused on it.
Until that day, wonderful.
They don't want to learn nothing.
Okay, so it's like, but you know, sometimes if you're lucky, I say lucky, you get hit by a bus, or you lose a loved one, or you have a sickness. You know, these shakeups are life's wake-up calls. So some people get it earlier, but what you're saying is, if you haven't gotten it by then, midlife is going to wake you up.
Yes, somewhere between 35 and 45 years old. That's the range. That's the place where it happens. And all that's got to happen is you need a chaos childhood that you've never dealt with. You don't have a Dr. Love in your life, so you never dealt with it. And all you need is a death, a big move, a disease, your wife goes into a midlife, so something. And then once that happens, kaboom, the machine turns on, and it literally takes you over. It absolutely is. And by the way, it doesn't take you over in your social life. It doesn't take you over in your work life. It only takes you over in the intimate relationship. That's where
absolutely. People always say that. Well, how come I'm fine at work? Well, because you got all we leave our craziness in the transference usually happens at home. However, I did have a woman who brought her transference, if you want, the machine to her bosses, and every boss became her abusive mother. Every boss. So sometimes you might bring it to a boss who's a parental figure.
It could happen. But you've got to be pretty damaged before that shows up at work. You've got to be really damaged. And a lot of childhood pain, a lot of abuse, abandonment, neglect in your childhood could bring it into work. And that's why I always recommend that people understand the childhood before they hire a person. Because if you've got chaos in your childhood, you're hiring childhood chaos. And if it's severe, you're really hiring it.
Well, that's interesting, because then we would change our interviewing process instead of where did you work last? How did toilet training go? I'm not hiring you if you didn't toilet train easily, you know.
or if the toilet training was traumatic.
Oh, can we talk? Oh, my God. So how long in your experience does a midlife crisis last?
Well, the classic in all the studies is 2 to 5 years, But men, it's even longer. And because men are naturally selfish, as opposed to women, they're naturally selfish. They have that, you know, that me orientation anyway. They can last like 8 years of just me, and really being caught up in themselves. But in order for that to last that long, you need a really obsessive mother or a really obsessive father to really set that machine in really self-centered mode. And that's what actually the road I was on. That's what happened to my brother and sister. They were very, very self-centered people, and they couldn't understand somebody else because my parents were really wrapped up in themselves, so we all got the imprint.
But it's amazing that, because very, very uncommon, it's very uncommon for someone who's that selfish to be willing to say, I'm selfish. That's big that you got there.
Well, that's only because of Marcia. I credit everything to Marcia.
Because Marcia, her pile driver, army sergeant, you know, battering ram personality was necessary to get through all your armor.
And it really did. It did take 27 years to get that job done. And
wow.
The 27 years, you know, this is, they elected the second Bush, and a dawning revelation. Yeah, and this is after a lot of hard work on my part of searching for, you know, how do I be happy in any circumstance. It just like was a dawning, surprising revelation that acceptance is really what came over me. Acceptance.
But now it's interesting because the to say how can I be happy in everything is still a me orientation, right? What can I do to be happy? So for selfish people, that can go run amok too, right? Where it's all about me and I want to be happy. So you also combined it with something else, didn't you?
Well, I wasn't thinking that clearly during those years, but you're right.
Right.
I was pursuing how can I be happy in every circumstance, because if I could do that, then I would feel good about myself.
Exactly. So that was still the selfish person, right?
Well, in the 27th year, I this acceptance like came over me. It literally did. It was like a gift, you know, that came over me.
Your acceptance, it enabled you to actually be less selfish, because then you were able to accept her and be more loving to her, you know?
Came
full circle.
Selfishness is being against the loss of what's in it for me. I'm against the loss of my stuff. That's why I was so troubled. I was troubled because I was driven by selfishness. I'm against the loss of what I want. And mm-hmm. so it's against energy once again. There it is again. Right?
So you know, you said a second ago that it's natural for men to be selfish, and actually Sigmund Freud said that it's not even natural for men to get married because they do not like the idea of being confined and controlled by marriage. They have to be happy in a marriage. Freud said that a man has to be willing to subjugate his ego to that of his partner, to put her first, to make her happiness come ahead of his own. Wow, that doesn't come naturally to most men.
No, it does not. And so when that man's childhood comes for him, boy, it comes hard. And the woman needs to start to realize, what am I doing? Do I have against energy? Well, if I've got against energy, it's feeding his against energy. And now
we've
got two people in an intimate relationship, both consumed with against energy. Well, bad things are going to happen. And that's what divorce is.
You know, it's also the against energy is almost like the terrible twos. You know, in the terrible twos, you define your identity by saying no. That's how you are proving I'm me, not you. I'm separating my identity. So I say no. I'm against everything. I'm oppositional. I'm omnipotent. That is a normal phase of development. But for many people, I would actually say that the against energy or the oppositionalism forms in the terrible twos. And if something went wrong, especially in the twos, where you had a parent that was very controlling of you, that you had to be rebellious because you were too controlled, where you weren't allowed to say no and spread your wings. That's where a lot of this starts. It's about that age. So if you're looking back to when the machine started to derail, it's usually around that age.
You know that you bring up the terrible twos. That made me think of parents. You know, they're not getting married young. They're getting married old now, so they want to be old now. They're more mature, have money, houses, etc. And so then they can raise kids because they got all their problems out of the way. Well, it turns out the parents are marrying older, and they're not fixing anything. The machine's still there, Nothing's been dented. Nothing's been altered. And now they're having kids at 35 and 40 years old. Doesn't matter. They are not smarter. They are not wiser. They're still full of against as they ever were.
Oh,
because
yeah, you're just older.
About their childhood. They don't want to acknowledge this thing.
And actually,
lie.
You know what, Larry? As you get older, you just get more of whatever you were, unless you work on yourself.
You
just get more. So that's a scary thought, if you don't work on yourself.
The solution, where is love? Love is not in against energy. Stop thinking it is. It's not. Acceptance is where it is. And by the way, I have to say, you cannot accept the loss of your safety. If a person's dangerously abusive, you can't stay there, right? So you can't stay in a marriage, in a house with a dangerous person. I'm not talking about, physically abusive people. I'm talking about on the assumption that you're physically safe, what would happen if you ended all your against energy and put all your energy into acceptance of everything, everywhere? Yourself, this person you're married to, your dog, your house, everything. What?
Accept. I accept my dog poops on the rug.
Yes. And my cat pees on
that.
The wall.
Exactly. I accept everything. So before we stop, because we have a couple minutes left, I want to make sure that everyone knows how to reach you, what we can promote, because you have something called How to Survive Your Spouse's Midlife Crisis, Unraveling the Chaos, and you have a website for that. Which is www.survivemidlifecrisis.com, right?
Yes, and you will see a man button and a woman button. So if you're a woman married to a troubled man who's going through a midlife crisis, you want to click on how to survive your husband's midlife crisis, and the opposite, if you how to survive your wife's midlife crisis. So there's a button for each of you there, and then that will tell you the whole story of expanding on what we're talking about here today.
Now, Larry, if someone's gay, how does that work? With your
The dynamics are very, very related, very similar. But what's going on now is you've got two genders. So we've got two female genders in the dynamic that we don't have in a male-female situation. And you got to account for that.
If I'm a woman and I'm gay, would I say, how would I survive my husband's midlife crisis or my wife's?
So if you take more of female qualities, you are now the woman. If you take more male qualities, you are now the man. And that's how you identify yourself in a gay relationship.
Okay.
It's with the qualities. It's kind of like saying, well, do you take after your mother or take after your father? You know how we think of that, right? Well, do you take after more female traits? Do you take after more male traits? And typically, you see that in gay relationships. There is somebody in that relationship who has more female kinds of qualities. And one that has more male kinds of qualities.
Okay. So when they come into your website, you're going to be pointing them to the male or the female side. And then what do you have? You have a membership?
A couple of weeks, this is actually a course, an audio course. And it's going to take you through the details of how do you get to this acceptance energy and undo all this against energy and start to see what actually happened to you. So that the course is going to take you through that. And this is a $97 course. So we're going to do a Dr. Love discount of $20 for 2 weeks. And all we have
nice.
To do is put the promo code Jamie in the promo code box. So
wait a minute. I'm against that. All right. You have been so much fun. It's been wonderful having you. I hope you'll come back soon.
Oh, thank you very much. You're a great host, Jamie. I endorse what you're doing.
I love what you're doing. So we will see each other soon. And you promise.
Okay.
Promise.
Good deal.
Okay?
Promise.
You promise. All right. So, everybody, I'll see you next week on Ask Dr. Love Radio. And you know what? For whatever reason, I can't remember what the show is, but go to my website and you'll hear more about what's happening next week. Have a good week. Accept. Take care.